ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
And there was great pop music coming out at the time where they had power, but they also had pop smarts. And I just would hear that and go, oh, I want that. And the band, thankfully, Andy and Russ went, yeah, we'll go with that. But can we freak out at the end of every song? And I'm sure it could make your
Well, where do you begin with Tim Rogers? For more than 30 years, he's been the soundtrack to our lives. As frontman for UMI, an acclaimed solo artist and keen collaborator, he's an actor, an author, and once was even a Double J broadcaster. Today, he's here to take five. Welcome, Tim.
This is a pleasure.
I gave you this theme of a living because I thought that it could be taken as a day job, as how you live, as how you've maybe chosen to live differently in earlier times, today, the essence of how to make a life, which is a big theme, what it means to be alive. And your first choice is from the wonderful Magic Dirt. This was a huge breakthrough single from them, 1994, their Life Was Better EP. You chose Ice.
Mm.
Why did you choose this song?
I could have chosen a lot of Magic Dirt songs and Adelita songs, Bleak Squad songs, but I just remember where I was when I saw it. It was in a hotel room in Albury, and after shows everyone does what they do and you put Rage on, and I'd heard about Magic Dirt a lot. People were very, very excited about them, and the clip for Ice came on with that very unusual time for the, and particularly at the time, the sequence. Which I've asked Adelita and Adam, who played the drums on that record, so many times about where that idea came from, and the story changes over time. I was quite shocked. It was so powerful and so intriguing, and it felt dangerous, really exciting. Ice obliterated everything, and I thought, I don't know. It was a bit of a relief to think I don't aspire to that, because I can't. There's something so brilliant and powerful about it that I just want to be a fan for the rest of my life, and I am. One of those times where you go, these are contemporaries, and the most exciting thing I've ever seen.
Yeah, exciting is a word that I think of a lot with this song, because whenever I listen to it, I still get that thrill. And maybe it is that time signature. Maybe it's the way that, you know, a lot happens in that song. It sort of goes through a bunch of different chapters, and then the way it ends with ads just... screaming, and then almost like dropping the guitar, the feedback, leaving the stage. Like, it is such a thrilling song. And in that way, it feels timeless, doesn't it? Because you still feel that same thrill that you did when you first heard it, you know, more than 30 years ago.
I just did then. It's I've been driving so much in this past fortnight, driving Red Cross's gear and Hard-On's gear. And there are times if I need a little bit of energy and it's, you know, drunk enough coffee for the day, and I think that's one song that will get me through 100 miles, because I'll listen to it once and I'm just in.
It is coffee.
it's a stronger, less legal coffee.
Slave. you and Ads and all of Magic Dirt, you know, played together live pretty regularly throughout the last 30 years that you've played together, also collaborated on stage in various tributes and other gigs. This is a pretty big question, but do you talk about, you know, you and Adelita and other members of Magic Dirt, do you talk about how much it's changed being an artist, making a living as an artist in the last 30 years?
Oh, it's unavoidable, yeah. I guess the irony of the Hall of Fame stuff last year is that we are completely broke. Phil Jamieson and I talked yesterday about financial stuff and what we do to get by, and everyone's got this kind of dog barking, you know, you need to pay rent and the electricity bill, and Ads and I were talking about real estate stuff recently, and it's about just trying to get a loan and walking into a bank and asking for a loan, and the question will come up, well, what do you do? And say, well, we're artists. And you just get laughed out of the building, which is the way it is. And so, you know, we all do performances that we wouldn't necessarily want to do. Doing the tribute shows, which I'm very glad to do, there's a little bit of a mercenary element about it. First thing is, if I get asked to sing Rolling Stones songs or whoever the artist is, the Beatlemen or whatever, I think, well, I love those songs. This is easy. You know, Tex and I, if we get asked to do something, you know, hey, will you sing 20 Stones songs? And I say, yeah. And I say, oh, but can we tell you about what you're going to get for a performance? It doesn't matter. I mean, this is just what we do. I mean, we kind of do it every day anyway. Mm. And but you have to factor it in and think, well, oh, my God, that means I can maybe spend a couple of weeks writing and not going back to mowing lawns for a while. And, yeah, it's the way it is.
Yeah, it's a pretty brutal reality that I think that a lot of people are still not quite across for most musicians who are trying to make a living.
Basically, I do not know, I might be lying, but I'm going to tell you that I do not know which songs the BBC are going to take. I mean, we just do a little sort of evening show, just do some singing, and they film bits of it. Most of it is over and done with by now. And I keep on trying to get them to do this one. And the buggers aren't going to.
We're talking about this idea of a living, and your next choice is a discovery for me, an artist by the name of Jake Thackray. Why did you choose him?
I think a lot of these musicians chose me. Jake Thackray, I think my parents were fans. He actually had a BBC show called Jake Thackray and Songs, where it was mid-70s. He was a school teacher in Leeds and only picked up guitar quite late. He was such a big fan of the French singer-songwriter chansonnier Georges Brassens.
J'ai tout oublié des campagnes, d'Austerlitz et de Waterloo, d'Italie, de Prusse et d'Espagne, de Pontoise et de Landerneau.
Whereby lyrics are everything. Jake Thackray had a beautiful sonorous voice, but he can be a very comedic writer.
Beware of the bull. The bull, the bull, is the biggest of all. He is the boss, he is, because he's big and we are small. But the bigger the bull, bigger the bull, bigger the bulls. The bigger the bull, the bigger and quicker and thicker the bull. Shite falls.
But also writes about small town English life. Had terrible stage fright, and when you see performances of Jake Thackray on television or live shows, you can see the terror in his eyes. This song, The Bull, is probably my favourite Jake Thackray song, because it's about hierarchies and very much about class, but it's also very, very, very funny.
And how we have to plead with him, how bashfully he climbs up the steps of the microphone two at a time. Then down it comes, slick, slithery pat. If you must put people on pedestals, wear a big hat. The
tongue he's got is pure gold, the breast is pure brass, the feet are pure clay, and watch out for the arse.
It's recorded, this version, in 1981. I'm not sure when it was actually written, but, you know, 45-odd years later, it still resonates, doesn't it? You can absolutely attribute, as we're about to hear in these lyrics, this character to many authoritarian figures operating in the world today, which is kind of, it's kind of devastating but also unsurprising, right?
It's something we talk about at home quite a bit, and I guess the talk these days is, oh, we live in these incredibly bad times. But if you're a student or a soft watcher of history, there's always been bad times and always shocking, horrible authoritarian figures. And at every sort of level of it, even notice it in performers these days who say dreadful things on, you know, whether it's radio or television, or and they probably don't even mean it. And I have friends who have been really called out about things that they've said. And on reflection, they think, you feel with hot air and you're not thinking about something. You feel that you've got to take up space or something. I think I was at my worst as a person when the band was really successful, because I just wanted to go to the next level, you know. And remember a record company fella in Los Angeles saying, we're going to send you to London to write with Ray Davies of Kinks. And I thought, well, this is every dream come true. I get to hang out with a hero of mine. But I didn't even talk to my bandmates about it. I look back at that with great shame, but I thought, I'm going to go and write with Ray Davies. And this is maybe 1998. Because all I could think of is, oh, I'm in that echelon now where I can write with a hero. And hang on, there's Rusty and Andy, my group, but more importantly, my friends. And I didn't even tell them about it. And I didn't end up going. I'd rather stay and drink beer and watch soccer with my friends.
I don't even know where to respond to that. It's a lot.
Beware of the bull, the dancing cock is right. Beware of whoever looks down upon you from a height. Beware of his honour, his excellence, his grace, his worship full. Beware of his highness because of the bull. For if the boss, the chief, the chap at the top, should let a single lump of claptrap drop, the greater the weight and the height he is, the harder it will go, with a grander splat on the bleeders below. Beware of the bull. The bull is the biggest of all. He is the boss, he is, because he's big and you're small. But the bigger the bull, bigger the balls. The bigger the bull, the bigger and quicker and thicker the bull shuffles in. The hero arrives, we hoist him shoulder high. He's good and wise and strong, he's brave, he's shy. And how we have to plead with him, how bashfully he climbs up the steps of the microphone, two at a time. Then down it comes, slick, slithery pat. If you must put people on pedestals, wear a big hat. The tongue he's got is pure gold, the breast is pure brass, the feet are pure clay, and watch out for the arse. Beware the bull. The bull is the biggest of all. He is the boss, he is, because he's big and we are small. But the bigger the bull, bigger the bull, bigger the bulls. The bigger the bull, the bigger and quicker, thicker the bull, shrunk for music. At long last, the revolution comes, and in no time at all we're erecting podiums. Comrades with chests and medals by the balcony fall, after the red flag, the galloping bull. The saviour came, especially from on high, to face up to the punters eye to eye. No sooner is he dead and gone, there's blessed pulpits full, bestride the holy lamb, behold the bull. Beware of them. The bull is the biggest of all. He is the boss, he is, because he's big and we are small. But the bigger the bull, big. so over-glorified. There's one of them here, his name's on the poster outside. And he's up here like this, and you are all down there. Remember, he's cock and his bull, and not to be aware. For when they've done, we clap, we cheer, we roar. For he is a jolly good fellow, Uncle Momo. How glorious it would be if before these buggers began, we all stood up together and solemnly sang, beware of the bull. The bull is the biggest of all. He is the boss, he is because he's big and we are small. But the bigger the bull, bigger the bull, bigger the balls. The bigger the bull, the bigger and quicker, and the bigger and quicker and thicker, and the bigger and quicker and thicker and slicker the bull, shine forth.
I'm kind of intrigued about the feelings that Thackeray had on stage, that he was not a natural performer, that he didn't like being up on stage, that he preferred these small halls, these country pubs over big theatres. He just didn't like audiences. How do you balance, if we're talking about a living, how do you balance being an artist and giving the people what they want?
It's the big question, isn't it? I'm heading out on a solo tour on Friday. And fully aware that 93% of the audience are there to enjoy the camaraderie of being with people and hearing some music in the background. And you've just got to think maybe there's one person in there who's interested in what I'm trying to do lyrically here, because going out and playing shows or making records, you've really just got to come back to thinking what impresses me about songwriting. If you presume what an audience wants, that's sort of marketing. And if you want to be an artist or a craftsperson, it's just got to be what turns you on about songwriting. But with the kind of music I do, which is kind of amplified folk music, you've got to kind of be relentless about it, because if you just write a dull verse, of which I've written many, I mean, how many more songs about drinking can you write? And so with a performer like Jack Thackeray, he pulls subjects from everywhere. It can be a country bus, it can be a farmer, it can be someone you just notice, you know, and the potential for what you can write about is just all there. And that's what I love about folk music. And that's why it's so exciting in the pop sphere to hear when there's something a little subversive in there, or a little bit idiosyncratic, rather than just maybe it's getting hot in here, which is a killer song.
I mean, it's a jam. No shame.
I listened to that on the drive. I just thought if someone pulled up at the van and I look over and go, oh, there's that old Tasman Tim. Is he listening to Nelly? Is it hot in here?
And he's having a great time.
Oh, it was a tough 20 kilometres from Kyneton to home, so I need Nelly.
Yeah, we all need Nelly at some stage. Well, while you're on that tip of artists who, you know, say more than just it's getting hot in here, complexity, metaphor, pure genius in songwriting. Your next choice is from, I know, a big hero of yours, Joni Mitchell.
I'm always running behind the time, just like this train, shaking into town with the brakes complaining. I used to count lovers like railroad cars, I counted them on my side. Lately I don't count on nothing, I just let things slide. The station master shut the cars, boxcars are
you can't find your goodness, 'cause you lost your heart. How big does Joni loom in your world?
Well, she didn't until a couple of years ago. I had the good fortune of doing a show at the Adelaide Fringe with some friends, and Tommy Gleeson was on the show I was on, and you know, we're acquaintances. And when I got asked to do Hard Quiz, I bought every Joni Mitchell record I could find and just listened to nothing but Joni Mitchell for 2 months before doing Hard Quiz, because I wanted to challenge myself. Read everything I could find about Joni, and what a fascinating flipping life. And she just took me over, and Joni Mitchell came into my life at a time when I really needed her. Everybody waiting, old man sleeping on his bags, women with that teased up kind of hair, kids with the jitters in their legs, and those wide, wide open stairs, and the kids got cokes and chocolate bars. There's a thin man smoking a fat cigar. Jealous love'll make you crazy, and you can't find your goodness because you lost your heart. Joni writes what she calls question chords. And it was, I think it was Charles Mingus, when the great jazz composer, when they collaborated, and he said, well, Joni, you write these question chords, you've got to resolve. And Joni's response, and I'm paraphrasing, was that, well, that's such a male thing to do. I'm not a male. And so finishing with a question and not resolving is part of my nature. I want to keep asking those questions. And so the question chords in this song really get me. She's comparing herself to a train that's irregular stops, and you know, there's some romantic allusions. But it comes to no conclusions. And so the chords in it, which I've never worked out, I don't try and play Joni songs because they're just mysteries to me.
Mm.
And I don't hear them and go, oh, that's a major seventh there or a minor seventh. They're so unusual harmonically that they're things you don't ever want to figure out. That's why I listen to certain jazz performers, particularly Bill Evans, and I'm thrilled that there's a movie about Bill Evans coming out soon. His piano playing is full of question chords and things that don't necessarily resolve. And that's the way I like my music. You know, sometimes you want things tied up in a bow and other times you just want it to be unwrapped.
Just like this train, shaking into town with the brakes complaining. I used to count lovers like railroad cars, I counted them on my side. Lately I don't. Let things slide. The station master shut the cars. Boxcars are banging in the yards. Jealous lover will make you crazy if you can't find your goodness, cause you're lost. Strong cat without claws or any reason to resume, and I found this empty seat in this crowded waiting room. Everybody waiting, old man sleeping on
I was watching the they'd obviously been doing Joni jams at Joni's house, but that moment where Joni came as a surprise act at the Newport Folk Festival. Joni, will you sing us a couple more?
Yeah.
And singing Both Sides Now, and even just thinking about it makes me want to cry, but it's just such an incredible performance, everyone just standing there, and obviously the weight of that song, having she wrote it in her 20s, and it's obviously songs looking back on a life, and to hear her come off the back of recovering from the brain aneurysm, not having performed, I think, for either 9 or 15 years, it was a long time, people hadn't really even seen her in public, to then sing that with that beautiful resonant depth of her voice and sing that song. It's just like, I am deceased.
In the air and feather canyons everywhere. I've looked at clouds that way, but now they only block the sun. And they rain and they snow on everyone. So many things I would have done. But clouds got in my way.
And that her voice was was in a different timbre, a register. 50 flipping cigarettes a day will do that to you.
Yeah, she proudly was a smoker too, wasn't she? Which I kind of love.
Yeah. Even her kind of cocaine years were, she was like, well, hell yeah. And, you know, what a hedonist and enthusiast. And, to do that to a song that she wrote as a very young woman and then return to it and make it not a different song, but a different interpretation of song. I rewrote songs related to an old record I did in 1999 and rewrote them all a couple of years ago because I thought, well, maybe it was influenced by Joni. The wonderful thing about being a musician is that you can go and revisit those songs and a song for Your Mile, like that Berlin Chair thing, we can play it now and really enjoy it because it's not as 24-year-old you or my, but as 56-year-old. And so that a song like Berlin Chair is all about the audience. It doesn't particularly mean a hell of a lot to us at the moment, but that's one song where we allow ourselves to just look at the crowd and see one or two of them go, oh, yeah. You can revisit those things, which I don't know really many other art forms where you can do that.
If it's a good song, it should be a living song. It should be a song that's malleable, that changes, or at least its interpretation can change depending on the stage you're at in your life. That same sort of openness that the audience will receive a song, that should be applied to the maker of the song as well, right?
Well, would it be interesting if you had hits, you know, that people want to hear that?
Kim, you've got hits. Don't be modest. You've got hits. Well, from icons to a band that I've not heard about till now, tell me about NRBQ and how this tune, I Want You Bad, from 1978, fits into the Take 5.
NRBQ, when you see someone else who has an NRBQ T-shirt, they're your friend for life. And I've got three friends in Australia who are fanatical NRBQ fans. NRBQ stands for the New Rhythm and Blues Quartet. They can play rhythm and blues, but they can also then play a George Gershwin tune or a Stephen Sondheim tune and turn it into something that you'd hear in a bar at 2 in the morning in New Orleans. I have never seen them live, and they are the one band I need to see before I die. And this is from an album called Live at Yankee Stadium. And the joke being then the front cover is the four of them in the dugout at an empty Yankee Stadium. kind of poking fun at their lack of big success, even though they're loved and adored by massive artists. They're dexterous, they're funny, they're fun, they're good. And anytime you and I or the Hard-Ons, whoever I'm playing with, are playing a club of 20 people, I think about NRBQ every night and go, there are times when NRBQ played at 50 people, but those 50 people are fanatics.
I'm all run out of things to do. I got no other plans but you. So that's his living, not a job, but just chasing this girl he's in love with.
It's a horny song.
It's called "I Want You Bad." It's telling you what it is on the box.
That there's a humour about that because there are no oil paintings in NRBQ. And so, hey, I want you bad, and I'm picturing that the object of his affection would be, no, fuck you, or yeah, help, let's go for it. He's like, I want you bad. And he said, yeah, all right. It's there's nothing to me, it's not a sleazy song. It feels, we're humans, we have amorous tendencies. How about it?
Let's go for it. It's direct. I mean, this band that I'd never heard of until you introduced them to me, so thank you. Thank you for inviting me into this club. They wrote really catchy songs, all these wonderful pop rock hits, and it made me think about that shift that UMI had, and particularly as we've been celebrating, coming off the back of celebrating Hi-Fi Way into Owly Daily. This year is the 30th anniversary of Owly Daily, which feels like you really embraced your pop smarts on this record. You really went, okay, let's go down that route and let's have some fun. Did that feel like a shift for you when you were making it?
I just learned how to do it. And it was largely due to Brad Shepherd of the Hoodoo Gurus, because he and I were very close at the time, and he would bring over records by the Zombies or the High Llamas.
Good morning to you.
and showed me the chord changes. There's a Zombies song called Care of Cell Block 44, where it goes from this B flat to an A minor 7. And Brad showed me how to play it, and the world opened up. And I think I could afford a capo by that stage. And so I found different chord voicings. But also it was largely to do with Rusty, because when Rusty joined the band, and I'd seen Russ just playing punk rock bands, but the more we got to hang out, and he was my hero, and he'd play me great pop music. The way you almost started and making hard rock music or frunge music or whatever it was because we didn't know the chord changes and how to do that. It was the style of the time. We were very influenced by Jane's Addiction and Mudhoney definitely. And then through people like Brad and Rusty, and Tracy, my partner at the time, still dearest friend, just had these big collections, and they'd be listening to pop music. And there was great pop music coming out at the time, you know, bands like Swerve Driver and Teenage Fan Club, where they had power, but they also had pop smarts. And I just would hear that and go, oh, I want that. You know, hearing something like Alcohol Day by Teenage Fan Club. And when I learned that song, I thought, it's got everything. It's got power, it's fun, it's sweet, it's melancholy. It had everything, and I learned how to do that. And the band, thankfully, Andy and Russ went, yeah, we'll go with that. But can we freak out at the end of every song and finish with a big calamitous things falling over? Sure.
Mark the anniversary?
I think plans are afoot for the band to do it. It's a pretty strange record. I was living such a... We did 200 and something shows the year that we wrote that record. And I was missing home. I wasn't missing home. I was missing Tracy, but I guess I just needed something to keep my fragile little noggin together while we're doing these endless tours of the States. And so it was Patrick White books and Jared Manley Hopkins poetry and definitely Kinks records. And it wasn't really the style of the time to write something like that. But that's what the band were kind of listening to, pop music and... but. Power pop.
There's a huge amount of people that this is a very special record for.
It's special for me. I remember making it. I refer to it as our Sullivan's record. When Toby Martin, great, great songwriter, put out a record, and I think it was based in Hurstville, and he wrote about the multicultural aspects of his suburb, and that made me reflect on Ali Daly and just how, what kind of world was I living in? It's all about tea and toast, and when really it was kind of party drugs and hard alcohol. But where I went to for my own peace of mind was the Sullivan's aspect of Australian living. Was just where I went to when I was at a hotel in St. Petersburg, Florida, you know, and desperately wanted some peace, and so I went back to Sullivansville, which is how I'm finding comfort in World War II.
We have one more song in your take five, all the things that culminate in a living, and we're finishing with a beautiful song written by Linda Thompson but performed by the immaculate Martha Wainwright.
The product of true lover's sighs, the apple of my jaundiced eye, I dared to hope you'd be. 100 men in their white coats would check you with their stethoscopes and hand you straight to me.
So Linda Thompson, I guess she grew up as a performer in the late 60s British folk scene, famously married to Richard Thompson, and they made these incredible records together. They broke up, and they broke up as a performing duo. And soon after that, Linda suffered a trauma whereby she couldn't sing anymore. And so she released this record maybe a year and a half, 2 years ago. She called it Proxy Music, and she represents the first Roxy Music cover on the front. She got her family, her daughter Kami, son, Teddy Thompson, just to perform those songs that she wrote. And my story with Martha is I had a TV show a few years ago, and Martha was like the Taj Mahal of the TV show. I thought anything I can do to get Martha Wainwright on the program, because she's just I love her songwriting and her singing and everything about her. And when she came on the show, she kind of looked at me and said, "You're a fan of my dad's, aren't you?" And I said, "Yeah." She said, "Yeah, I can pick you guys, you know, you're crusty old." And she said, "I'm going to bet you that, I bet you that you ask me about him." And I said, "Well, Martha, I'm not. There's enough to talk about with you." And so I won the bet, because I didn't ask her about her dad. She brought her dad up. And so we went out drinking and at wonderful Cicciolina's in St Kilda. And she was just as great as you ever were. She was so much fun and funny and charming and the whole deal. But this song of Linda's that Martha sings, "You Could Be All These Things or Nothing at All," it's another one of those question songs where nothing really seems resolved in it. I'm never quite sure about what Linda is trying to say in the song, but it makes me feel so much. It's just all emotion and incredible chord changes, and then Martha just sings the hell out of it.
"But you'll always be the flower of my heart. I promise you, I promise you, I promise you. There will be sparkling wine, dinner at 9:30.
my foolish hopes abound. Catch you the next time around.
And it's hugely inspiring for me because I think I'd love to write songs for other people to sing. One of the first people who sung one of my songs was my mate Missy Higgins, and I asked her to sing on this song of mine, and hearing her sing one of my tunes was like nothing I would have done, and hearing words that I'd written out of someone else's beautiful voices was quite something.
Yeah, I'm like crackers and mustard, only good when you're drunk, but I'm there all the time, just sitting inside, just waiting on your need for some hollow calm for now.
I'd love to do that in the future. I've got notebooks here.
Wish lists.
Well, so there's songs. I mean, the wish list is huge. So if there's any singers out there who wouldn't mind collaborating with Hall of Famer Tim Rogers.
There it is. There's the sell.
Yeah.
This song as well, I mean, Tim, this is a song about parenthood. It's a beautiful song about everything that you wish in a child, the things that happen, the things that don't happen, the things you can't foresee, but you could be all of these things or nothing at all, and none of it matters.
Being a parent of an incredible young woman, and she came out to Australia for the Hall of Fame time and doing her own shows, and I was the bass player in a band, and it was terrifying because I love those songs so much. But one night we'd probably had a couple of shandies, and Ruby did extrapolate upon, you know, what do you want from me? And I thought, absolutely nothing, you know. Just your existence. And I remember my mother saying to me as a kid, because I was mucking up a lot and really didn't have a lot of prospects, and she did say to me one time, I actually just want you to be happy. And it was just such a I think I read too much late 19th century Russian literature where the expectations are so great on the kids and to become something respectable, and for my mum to say, no, I don't care, I just want you to be happy. I mean, it'd be nice if you dressed well and got your hair cut, but for Ruby, she just happens to be brilliant, but I just wanted to be happy, you know, so she could be all these things or nothing at all. I honestly, Zen, I've never thought about this as a parental song, isn't it? Songwriting is actually what I do for a living, apart from lawn mowing, and yet I've missed the biggest point of this song. I just put it on. I think it's because I start crying after about 5 seconds, and so it's just it washes over me, and I don't pick it apart enough.
Should we press play and listen to it with new ears?
We shall.
Hey, Tim, thanks for taking 5.
This has been an education and a pleasure, darling. It's lovely to see you.
Product of true lover's sighs, the apple of my jaundiced eye, I dared to hope you'd be 100 men in their white coats would check you with their stethoscopes and hand you straight to me. I'd come to call at your behest, say comb your hair, put on your vest, the wind, it do blow free. There's a future, here's the past, another dream that couldn't last in love's economy. No tantrums, no laughter, no tears, no minutes, no hours, no years. You could be fat and warm, awake with a smile at dawn. You could be all these things or nothing at all.
A stunning song, A Big Life, and the one and only Tim Rogers. He's someone I could and often do talk with for days. I hope you love that conversation too. Tim is always making a living playing live. You can see his latest dates in the link I've popped in the show notes. And next time, we'll revisit one of the most stunning Take Fives in the history of the segment. No jokes. Ed LeBrock is a musician and broadcaster and much-loved member of the ABC Classic family. His story is phenomenal, and his adventures will stir your spirit. Playing music from the age of six, he's lived all over the world, ridden a bike from England to Hong Kong with only a violin for company, and taught music in Afghanistan.
You know, I had to go on this trip. I had to play the cello. I had to transition, and fortunately, everything has worked out. And at the end of all this whole journey is love.
The way Ed shares his story and sees the world is something you have to experience, and you will, when he takes five and takes you on the road. That's next time.
Come hang out with your mates on Double J.
Loving great music is a lifelong passion. And we're here to help you keep discovering. Hello, it's Michael Hing from Double J Mornings.
It's Yumi Stides here.
It's Dylan Lewis from Arvo's on Double J.
Great music lasts forever, and you'll find it on Double J.
Somebody that you used to know.
We're on DAB Radio in your car, or just swipe across on the Triple J app.